Back with you, Busy Show, Tuesday, March the 23rd, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. Will the General Assembly give an okay to extend the emergency powers of Governor Ned Lamont? We talked in the 3 o'clock hour to Republican State Senator Paul Formica about that. And Monty Frank, who last time around ran for the Lieutenant Governor's slot on a ticket with the late Oz Griebel. He joined us in the 4 o'clock hour to talk about the advancement, perhaps, of ranked choice voting. Take time out here just to get a progress report or an update as to what's going on at the Capitol with something kind of interesting. Governor Ned Lamont, as you probably know, is looking to extend his executive powers again during the COVID-19 pandemic. For the second or third time, some people say it's well warranted. There are others on both sides of the aisle who say, hey, maybe this isn't necessary now. Things are looking good. Let's get more hands in on these decisions. So whether that'll happen, who knows? We welcome back Republican State Senator Paul Formica, who we spoke with a few days ago, but I just want to get a sense of where this stands. Paul, good to have you on again. Thanks so much. Where do we stand on this, Paul? And is there far from unanimous thought that the governor should get his executive powers extended again for another run here? Where do we stand on this?
Well, good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to say hello once again. We're up. We just finished session here in Hartford today, and this morning Senator Kelly and I briefed the news media on what we think should be throttled down a little bit with regard to the governor's extension of emergency powers. We had an emergency. There is no question about it a year ago. And the governor managed his way through the emergency in a fairly good job. There were some things that he did very well and other things he did not. But as the emergency wanes and as the legislation starts to pick up here in the session and needs our determination, ours meaning the legislature, we believe it's time to get back to doing business here in Hartford and opening up the Capitol complex.
I know, Paul, one of the concerns here, Paul, I've heard from you and frankly even from some people on the Democratic side that I've talked to, is having public hearings on some key legislation here, some very important stuff, some very contentious stuff, Paul, done via Zoom, which is neat if you're doing a little one-on-one meeting in your office. But, you know, there is a thought, I guess, Paul, that, with proper distancing and proper precautions, we need to get back to face-to-face testimony here from the public ASAP. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, very much so, Paul. And I remember my days as first selectman, we'd have public hearings on contentious issues or issues of interest, even if they weren't contentious. And we often extended those public hearings to the following week or the following day. You know, here in the Capitol, we've had two overnight hearings, 24-hour hearings, in which one in planning and development, nearly 70% of the people signed up to testify were turned away after waiting 24 hours. And public health for 24 hours, over 80% of people signed up. You know, there's no reason why we couldn't have managed a 2-, 3-, 4-day, 10-, 12-hour hearing and really got the people up here, if they wanted to come to the Capitol, kept them social distancing, kept them, with masks on, kept everybody safe. And I think it's something that we definitely could have managed, much better than that. And while I think there will always be a place for Zoom, you know, the people's voice needs to be heard here in the people's house. And, we think it's time to get back to business, especially given, the governor is relenting and opening up more and more of the economy and businesses and museums and churches around the state. It's a good argument to say, why not here at the Capitol and let the people come and talk to us directly?
Paul, do you think there's a sentiment among some lawmakers who don't want to have their fingerprints on some things and just kind of say, well, you know what? If we can give him a few months more of him making all the decisions that we could stand by and look pious here, is some of that at work, do you think, from a purely political point of view?
Well, I think I think they punted on a number of occasions, and during the press conference that the majority Democrats had today after we held ours, they even said in terms of involving Republicans, they didn't feel it was necessary because we only represent a third of the state. And, if that's their attitude, toward 30% of the population of the state of Connecticut, then I think it's seriously needs to be addressed and adjusted. And it's unacceptable because, there are a lot of issues. It's, the legislature just in the last week and today we voted unanimously to control the CARES Act money. The governor had that, all to himself. So to a representative and a senator, people are saying it's time for this co-equal branch of the government to, start being more involved and acting like it. The emergency is waning, we can do better than what we're doing. And I think you're right. People are using this. Legislators on the other side are using this as a way to kind of not have to make decisions about listening to people and discussing these contentious and very important bills.
Paul, thank you. We appreciate it. Keep us updated here. Paul Formica, Republican State Senator. Paul, thanks. Be good and have a good weekend. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. There you go, folks. Well, it looks like the governor's on his way to having his executive powers extended for another 2-3 months. And there are people who would say, listen, let's just keep one central person or small group of people, making these decisions. And there are others who are saying, hey, wait a minute. As Mr. Formica just said, we're getting better. We're not going to go hog wild here, but it's time to let the government and the state do with for what we were elected for, for what those people were elected for. And I'm going through probably the 15 or 20 news sites I check constantly to see what's going on in the area. And I go to the Connecticut Mirror, which I wholeheartedly recommend. It was started years ago by a bunch of former Hartford Current people. It's a good site to look at. And I see this story there. Ranked choice voting gains momentum nationwide. And, of course, the gentleman who was next up here, we've had on before, has been championing ranked choice voting, and it is starting to show up in more and more places. We welcome back Monty Frank from SAM Connecticut, the Serve America movement. Monty, of course, was the lieutenant gubernatorial running mate a couple of years ago when he ran on a ticket with the late Oz Griebel. And Monty is back to chat with us about what happened with ranked choice voting in the last cycle and what's ahead. Monty, it's Paul again. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. Good to see you. How are you?
I'm good, Monty, and interesting article. I know you obviously have read it, and I skimmed it over, and I guess, Monty, something that you have championed and tried to explain to dopes like me in the past, ranked choice voting. Is this actually starting to get, Monty, some traction here?
I think so. I think we're seeing it gaining a lot of traction nationally. You know, the big test coming up is going to be in the New York City primary, where ranked choice voting is going to be used to sort out that large Democratic field. And I think when people are able to kick the tires around ranked choice voting, they're going to be really happy with their ability to vote for the candidate that they really like rather than having to choose the lesser of two evils. So I'm excited. I think it's gaining a lot of momentum, and it's going to be used, hopefully, in Connecticut before too long.
Explain, as you have very well to me in the past more than one time, Monty, explain, though, to the audience, if they don't quite understand the theory behind ranked choice voting and how it may entail actually more than one round of voting.
Yeah, it's essentially an automatic runoff that the registrars and the election officials can do virtually automatically. It doesn't take a lot of time. And it allows for a candidate to gain a majority of the vote. So the way it works, take the election that Oz and I were in against Nagelmann and Bob Stefanowski. If I had a dime for every person who said, I really want to vote for you and Oz, but I was scared. And so I voted for the lesser of two evils. So what red choice voting would do, it, you know, I'd be able to say back to that person, well, vote for me and Oz, number one, and then choose the lesser of two evils as your number two. And so after they tally up all the first place votes and the second place votes, the person who's in last place gets eliminated, and that person's second place votes gets reallocated. So you have these automatic runoffs until somebody gains, crosses the 50-yard line, gets 50% of the votes. So you end up with a candidate who both has a plurality of first-choice votes, but in addition has a majority of those who cast ballots. And that is so important because it forces candidates away from the fringes, away from toxic politics, towards trying to build a consensus around good governance and policy. And that's why it's so attractive to voters, why it's worked so well in so many places.
Monty Frank is the guest. Monty, hang on. I'm going to get more deeply into this. I'm going to give you some, you know, kind of opposite scenarios here on why some people I've talked to don't like it. Monty Frank is the guest. Monty, hang on. Traffic and weather together. 4:36 on WICC. From Sam CT, the Serve America Movement Connecticut branch, Monty Frank is the guest. Monty ran with Oz Griebel on the gubernatorial ticket with the late Oz Griebel a couple of years ago. You know, Monty, I'm reading a bunch of articles about this, and there's plenty of, Monty, pro and con about this. And obviously, this takes some effort to explain to people. And then there are people on the Democratic side who are saying, hey, this will cost us in heavily Republican areas, and there are people on the Republican side, Monty, who say, well, this will cost us in heavily blue areas. We're getting buried now. We'll get buried even further. What's your reaction to all that?
Well, I think what we are trying to do with Sam, both in Connecticut and across the nation, is to bust open this duopoly. So if you're only thinking about politics in terms of do you have a red sweatshirt on or a blue sweatshirt on, then maybe you don't like ranked choice voting. You know, if you think that your party's always right and you want to maintain the duopoly, then great. But what we have seen over the last 5, 10, 15 years is that politics has become incredibly tribal and toxic. And ranked choice voting is a way to bring back good governance, to build around principles of accountability, around our shared values of transparency, and have real competition in the elections that will bring out the best and the brightest in governance. You know, think about a guy like Oz Griebel, a man who had an incredible amount of integrity, mm-hmm. new policy, very smart, very hardworking. He knew the state, in my mind, would have been a transformational governor. With ranked choice voting, not only would he have had a very good chance of winning, but I think he might have won the election. And it's a shame that because Oz didn't want to get into the race as a Democrat or Republican, that he essentially had no chance. So ranked choice voting would bust that open. And allow for real competition like we have in every other segment of our nation.
I see that in some of these articles I'm reading, including the one of the Mirror, that some municipalities or some areas are not necessarily going with it for state-level races, but kind of putting a toe in the water on some local-level races that often are, you know, machine-controlled races on both sides of the aisle. And there are people, I guess, who think that ranked choice voting would give, you know, that candidate out in left field or right field who nobody thinks has a shot, you know, an opportunity here to get their message across and maybe to appeal to voters, even though they don't have the deep pockets.
That's absolutely correct. And it will not only that, but within the parties themselves, it will force candidates away from the fringes and more towards the middle where they can start building consensus. It will not eliminate, but it will reduce the trash talking and the toxicity that you see in campaigns. It will provide for more facts to be at the center of elections rather than being something that's thrown out the window in terms of the rhetoric, because not only are you competing for the party diehards, but you have to compete for second place votes. So that means the 40% block of unaffiliates are really in play. And so you've got to really change the way you conduct yourselves in the elections to have a broader appeal.
So, Monty, it's almost like a sports analogy here where you've got a team, I don't care what sport it is, hockey, basketball, baseball, or football, that says, hey, we may not have the horses to win the regular season or win the division, but if we can make the playoffs here, if we run a strong second or third, then watch us, because then we can play to our strengths.
That's a great analogy. And I think that's exactly right, because it allows for a broader playing field and more teams to really compete to win it all. You know, imagine how boring it would be if, you know, every single World Series, it was the Yankees versus the Dodgers. what's the point of that? I mean, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I prefer it be the Red Sox. But
yeah, of course, yeah.
Nobody would watch sports if that were the case. I mean, if you went into the grocery store and your only choice was Coke versus Pepsi, that'd be ludicrous. I mean, you know, and so you pick what segment of our economy, our nation, you want. And it's really only the political arena that is dominated by two dominant entities.
Yeah.
And so ranked choice voting is one of the democracy reforms that Sam is pressing, because it will open up more choice. More choice allows for greater competition. Greater competition in America has always produced a better result. And that's what we think ranked choice voting will do, and why it's so critical to democracy reform and fixing what is currently broken.
I'm no political Svengali, Monty, but, and you can probably tell that in our chats, but I'm guessing the powers that be in the General Assembly, both sides, Democrats and Republicans, they may not really be on board with this. Is there any chance you can get a toehold here on this, on an experimental basis, say in some cities or towns in the state? What's the next step for you with Sam in Connecticut?
Well, the legislature could, if it wanted to, without going to referendum to amend the Constitution, institute ranked choice voting in the federal elections. If it wanted to go beyond the federal elections to any of the municipal or statewide races, it would require a constitutional amendment. There was some traction around the study bill that was pending in the legislature. It doesn't look like it's going to get voted on this session. And I'm not a fan of the study bill. I think we ought to move directly towards ranked choice voting as a bill, whether you limit it first to municipalities or go statewide. I prefer to go statewide.
Yeah.
But there's more support for ranked choice voting than you think. There are more elected officials, representatives, who are looking to not have the parties be so controlling over everything they do.
Yeah.
That ranked choice voting might give them a little bit of oxygen to breathe. And so, you know, I think that what we're seeing in the Sam caucus members in the legislature that we're talking to, there's more support for ranked choice voting than the party brass might lead you to believe.
But no, there's no way then that an individual town or two in Connecticut could meet to change their town bylaws or their town charter and say, hey, we're going to go with this. They would need the okay from the General Assembly?
That's what our research leads us to believe, yes.
Interesting.
And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way Connecticut is. At this point in time, the people do not have a direct referendum. So you have to go through the legislature. They act as the gatekeeper. And so, you know, that keeps us in the land of steady habits, but it also keeps us behind the times. And it's about time that Connecticut starts looking at various election reforms, such as early voting that is being talked about, and no-excuse absentee ballots that many places across the country have adopted. And their systems, I think, are vastly better than ours.
The website, joinsamct.org, joinsamct.org. Check it out. Read for yourself. Evaluate it for yourself. Always good to hear from Monty Frank. Monty, be good, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Monty Frank there. And check it out, folks. This story was, let's see, on March 20th. So 3 days ago. It was in the Connecticut Mirror, ctmirror.org. And again, if it sounds confusing, but again, what ranked choice voting would be is you could rank how you want your candidate. In other words, I pick this person first, this person second, this person third, and then that balloting is looked at and saying, well, you know what, a lot of people wanted this person first, but nobody wanted him or her second or third. So again, think of it as a professional sports league when teams accumulate wins. And they may not be able to win the race, but if nobody gets 50%, it automatically, in a sense, triggers a runoff. And there are people who say it's a little difficult to understand, but this could break the vice grip as it is being held by both parties on the blue and the red side as well.